Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. From wherever and whenever you might be streaming, either on Facebook Live, on LA Talk Radio's channel, or perhaps on iTunes or one of the other avenues, we're so happy to have you here with us today. Before we get started, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible. Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary services, executive search, and contingency options. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment needs. Now, today's guest we have with us is Mike Goldman. Mike is an award-winning leadership team coach and the number one best-selling author of two books, Breakthrough Leadership Team and Performance Breakthrough. He speaks internationally to groups of business leaders such as the Young Presidents Organization, otherwise known as YPO, and the Entrepreneurs Organization. During his 30-plus year coaching and consulting career, he has worked with clients including Disney, Verizon, Chanel, and Polo Ralph Lauren. His insights have been featured in Forbes and Chief Executive Magazine, and he is widely regarded by CEOs as the expert on building great leadership teams. As a coach or speaker, Mike is on a mission to help CEOs grow their business and have more impact while creating a more engaging, fulfilling environment for their team using his breakthrough leadership team approach. Mike is a lifelong learner. In fact, he often says that if he's gone 90 minutes without recommending a book, they should probably call 911 because he might be having a stroke. So let's hope that's not the case, Mike, and that your health is well. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jennifer, for having me. At worst, I'm sure I'll recommend my book at some point here. So
And I'll recommend your book too. So it'll be a win-win for everybody. I'm like you. I'm a lifelong learner, which is what I love most about hosting this show is, of course, getting to share wisdom with incredible authors and speakers and thought leaders like yourself. So before we dive into today's topic, Mike, a little bit about work fatigue and how we're handling that with remote work. I would love for our listeners and our viewers who might be tuning in on Facebook to know a little bit about your journey and your story and how you came to be a two-time best-selling author on Amazon, which is no small feat in and of itself.
Yeah, and believe it or not, for a two-time author, I actually hate to write. So I love reading. I love talking. I could talk forever. Writing is a chore. But I guess the short version of my career is, I've been at it for over 30 years now in coaching and consulting. The first half of my career was working with big consulting firms, Accenture being one of them, although they were called Arthur Andersen back when I worked with them because it was way back in the late 80s. Early 90s in a company called Deloitte. And then about 15 years ago, I decided to start my entrepreneurial version and had a staffing and recruiting firm for a few years. And then the last 12 years, I've had my own coaching firm where I work with leadership teams to help create great leadership teams that create great companies. My latest book, Breakthrough Leadership Team, just launched late April.
Incredible. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So let's talk about this idea of remote work fatigue. First, let's talk about what that even means, and then we'll talk about how to prevent it.
Yeah, it's interesting. There was, when all of this COVID stuff hit, back in, I believe it was early May, Jack Dorsey, chairman and CEO of Twitter, put out an announcement that forevermore, no one from Twitter had to come into the office anymore. It was
home. I remember that. That's right. Yes.
And I looked at that. I think I saw it on LinkedIn. And all of these posts on LinkedIn were, that's great. More power to you. That's a long time coming. We're going that way anyway. What a great idea. And I said, man, I'm not so sure. And when it really hit us in kind of March and April, there was this fear and stress and lack of productivity. And very quickly, people started saying, you know what? We could work pretty well on Zoom. We're a lot more productive than we thought. And people took that, I think, a little too far and took a very small sample size and said, wow, I think we can do that. It's more productive. We may never need an office again. And what we've seen is kind of a real boomerang effect, where now all of a sudden that we've been at this way longer than we thought we would, there is a lot more stress and a lot more overwhelm than I saw even early on. And it starts at the highest levels. I work with CEOs and leadership teams, and it starts there. And man, if your CEO is stressed and overwhelmed and frustrated and claustrophobic, you know that's cascading down the rest of the organization in a pretty negative way. So I think people certainly have learned. There was some initial, what was called, people were calling it Zoom fatigue.
Yeah.
And I think people have gotten a little bit smarter on how they use Zoom. We're not using it for every call. We're taking bigger breaks in between meetings. But man, just being in that office, having to deal with family around and distractions around, not getting that energy from the other people around you, has really caused people to, you know, I'm not sure fatigue is the right word, but they're certainly more overwhelmed than they've been, more claustrophobic, and just they don't have that energy and don't feel as enthusiastic and passionate as they once did. And it's got a real impact.
So I would love to play devil's advocate with you on this for a couple of reasons. You know, obviously, I talked to a lot of business owners, leaders. I just spoke at a conference myself, and I'm fascinated because there were a lot of other leaders on this panel that I was on for law firms in particular around the world. And I've been hearing a little bit of both. So on the one hand, question number one is, do you think people would still have the same level of stress and fatigue and confinement that you're talking about if COVID weren't intermingled with the working from home? So that's question number one.
I think it's a good question. The real answer is I have no idea, right? It's hard to separate that out from the mix. But I do think to a large degree it would be there. I don't think we were necessarily all ready for this. This is not just a technology issue. Yes, Zoom and Microsoft Teams or whatever you're using at work, that has certainly helped. And I use things. I have full day meetings, even 2 day meetings with clients, and we do it all over Zoom. And we've found these other tools. There's a great tool called Mural, which is a great kind of virtual whiteboard. There are a lot of great tools. So I think we're, from a tool standpoint, we were more than ready to do this. But I really think from a cultural standpoint, from a social standpoint, I think people have minimized what it means to be in the same room, literally in the same room with other people and getting that energy from other people. The conversations in the hallway, the chit-chat before a meeting starts or after a meeting ends, to a large degree, that's what builds relationships. That's what builds culture. And the other piece I think people were missing when it's like, oh, we could all work from home now and it'll be great, is let's, for argument's sake, say you had a very positive, empowering, supportive culture within your organization. And that's saying something, because there are a lot of organizations, Jennifer, I'm sure we've both seen, that don't have
one
those.
One or two,
yeah. What people didn't realize is now, even in the midst of this chaos and the economic impact of what's going on, there's still a need for some companies to hire people. Well, now you've got to hire people. How do you indoctrinate them into your culture when they weren't there, when you were together and meeting in the hallways and going out for lunch together and having a drink or dinner after work or talking before the meeting or after the meeting? Now it's, okay, we're ready for the Zoom call. Here's our agenda. Let's get moving. That doesn't help someone really figure out what the culture is and become part of that culture. So I think there are bigger impacts. So I think that would have been an impact, to answer your question, Jennifer, COVID or not, that would have been an impact for us.
So question part two to this question is, I've heard some other leading experts say that perhaps this Zoom culture, this remote culture that we find ourselves in, is actually making us become more appreciative of one another and learn to connect to one another in more meaningful ways. Because as much as you're saying, yes, we did have the natural culture of water cooler chat and this and that, it was very automatic and autopilot. And there is a sense of having to bring awareness to what you're doing, to the meetings, because back in the day, when you were in a meeting, you could zone out, be on your phone, but now it becomes even more kind of under a microscope if you're doing that when you're in the middle of a Zoom meeting. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with part of it. I absolutely think, and I've definitely seen, you do start to appreciate those in-person relationships and just relationships in general. And maybe you took those for granted before. But I'm not so sure that, at least what I've seen in my clients and other CEOs and leadership teams that I'm exposed to, I'm not so sure they've all been able to take that appreciation and then really turn it around and say, so therefore, here's what we've done. Now, there are things I do within my meetings with my clients, and frankly, I've always done, and now it becomes even more important, where instead of just jumping right into the agenda, I say, let's start with a round of good news. And we go around. And by the way, it's not just professional good news. Let's talk about personal good news. It gives us a way to be real people before the meeting starts. That's really important. Not everybody does that. You know, I think there are absolutely ways, you know, we've all been on Zoom meetings where someone is on their couch and all of a sudden the dog jumps up on them, or the kid, you know, or the toddler, you know, walks over. And while that seems like a distraction, I do think that gives us a chance. If we let it, that gives us a chance to know each other on maybe even a deeper level than we did when we were just sitting in a conference room together. So this is certainly not a black and white situation. It's not all bad. It's not all good. But absolutely, I think, you know, COVID, you know, with COVID happening at the same time, it's not just a matter of us being on Zoom calls and not being able to get that energy from each other. When we get off that Zoom call, we're still in our house without being able to get that in-person energy from our family. Now, yeah, you've got the immediate family if you do have a family at home, but you're not getting that from the extended family. You're not getting that from friends. So I think it just, you know, it adds a multiple of maybe 5 or 10x on top of the adjustment we would have had if it wasn't for COVID.
Oh, great. I know I was talking to a dear friend and client earlier this week, and I think it was on Thursday, she said, or maybe it was over the weekend, that she went for a whole week without leaving the house because she just didn't feel safe. She was in an area that was quarantining. And I said, oh my gosh, I love you and you need to get out of the house. You know, how do you as a leader strike that balance? How do you, without being too intimate with your team members, because like you said, there's this new level of intimacy that we're finding, seeing people's kids running naked in the background or dogs jumping on laps. How do we embrace that intimacy and really provide the teams that we're working with the support they need for their mental, physical, emotional well-being so not only they, but the company as a whole can thrive?
Yeah, it's if you are proactive about it, I think it's actually fairly simple. And I'll give you an example from today. I had a 4-hour meeting, you know, with a client and the leadership team, and the meeting went very well. After the meeting, I texted the CEO, who's my key client, and just said, hey, how do you think it went? It's as simple as that. And she said, hey, do you have a minute? Let's chat. And she called and we had a conversation. I don't know that I would have done that if it was a conference room meeting. I don't know that I would have done it 3 months ago. I would have said, the meeting is over. I shut Zoom. I go on doing what I have to do. But what I've had to learn as a coach and a leader, and what leaders need to learn, is we need to double and triple the frequency of communication we have with people. Now, that doesn't mean double and triple the total number of minutes we spend. If you're a CEO or you're a, whatever your role is, if you're in 20 hours of meetings every week, I'm not saying great, you should now be in 40 to 60 hours of meetings a week. But what it means is, if as a leader, let's say you used to, you know, do one-on-ones with each of your direct reports for 45 minutes once every 2 or 3 weeks. Well, maybe now you need to do once a week, 15 or 20 minute discussions, more frequent communications that may be shorter. Because if you don't have that, then you're missing the opportunity to really understand what is going on in your organization. There are some people that are dealing with this very well. There are other people that are not dealing with it well. So I think having more frequent communication, the other thing, and this sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but as leaders, and again, a leader could be CEO, leader could be you're supervising a team of two or three, but as leaders, we tend to feel like we need to put our superhero capes on every day. And we need to show our team we're strong because we need to be an example for everything else. And I think people's hearts are in the right place when they do that. It makes logical sense. But it just doesn't work very well. You need to show that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You need to show your peers and your team that you're a human being. Now, I'm not saying, you know, take your camera and show yourself in the, you know, curled up in a ball, crying in the corner, wondering, you know, don't do that. Don't go that far. But vulnerability is so important. It's that vulnerability and that trust that comes out of vulnerability that really creates that honesty and that communication so you could be a team. So if you are always acting as if you're superhuman, then if you're my leader and you're acting that way, I'm going to be very hesitant to tell you, hey, I'm just, you know, I don't know what it is. I'm just not as motivated as I was before, or I'm feeling very overwhelmed by the amount of work, or I've got a family member that was just tested positive for COVID and it's been tough for me to focus over this last week. If you're superhuman, I'm going to be hesitant to tell you that. But if you open up to me and you're a regular human being and you're letting me know life isn't perfect for you either, then I'm going to feel comfortable being open with you. And now we can talk and now we can help each other.
Yeah, that's a great point. I remember 2 years ago, long before COVID, when I was running a staffing firm, I had a friend of mine who I hired. She was a damn good recruiter, and she had a young baby, I think a 1 or 2 year old at home. And her dream was to be able to work from home. And she began working from home, and I didn't check in often enough. I just thought, she's good. I've worked with her before. I know she knows what she's doing. I don't need to micromanage her. And she would come in the office once a week. And I had no idea, Mike, what a struggle it was for her. She was miserable working at home. And I just didn't check in and touch in and offer to support her enough. And that's when I was in the infancy of my leadership skills, too. So if I could rewind and go back, I would be applying all the tools you're talking about. Because when you're a leader, sometimes you don't want to seem breakable because, you know, you're just like, get your job done, achieve the numbers, et cetera. And then a year went by and then she was miserable and we're still friends, but it just wound up not being the right fit because I wasn't communicating clearly with her. And so I think it is always the leader's responsibility. And on the flip side, Mike, I think this conversation we're having is not just for leaders in organizations. I think because we all have this opportunity to step up and be a leader in our circle of friends, to be a leader in our family. I think leadership is being called to the forefront of humanity right now in so many different disciplines and ways that what you're saying is applicable. Just be a friend. Don't look like you have it all together. Sometimes you just got to tell your friend, hey, last Monday I ugly cried, or, you know, just be straight with people and, you know, just tell people what's really happening. Cause I think we're all teetering on the precipice of, okay, this is going to be really great, or I'm going to fall off the edge.
Yeah, we're you know, what's that quote? If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yes.
You know, it's all about being together. And it's interesting. I'm actually in the process of reading a book. And I don't feel like I could recommend it yet because I'm only about 30% through on my...
What's it called, Mike? You got to tell us the name of the book.
It's called Big Potential by okay. Sean Aker. Sean Aker is a thought leader and a professor around what's called positive psychology. Mm. And one of the things he's talking about, and I love it not only because I believe it and it's a really interesting book so far, but it's so consistent with what I coach in my clients and consistent with what I wrote about my latest book, is the whole idea is what he calls little potential. little potential is us doing the best we can for ourselves. That competitive environment where I'm going to try and do the best I can. I'm going to get an A in my class, or I'm going to get a 5 out of 5 on my performance review, or little potential is us going it alone and trying to do the best we can. Big potential is the whole idea of if we focus a good chunk of our time on lifting others up, then we all get lifted up and we wind up reaching a higher level, a greater percentage of our potential, as does everybody around us. So I guess I'm not even done with the book, but I'll recommend it anyway. It's such a great concept. And so far the book is great. So it really does, you know, I don't want to say it takes a village, sounds so cliche right now, but it really is. To me, it's all about the team. And that team could be the leadership team. That team could be the accounts receivable team. That team could be your family, your group of friends. But it's about the team. It's about the community.
Yeah, you just reminded me of a great quote I think I shared on Facebook. I'm drawing a blank on who it was by. And it said something about success is not measured by how well you do, but how many people you bring with you to the top, or how many people you support. And I so agree with that, because, you know, if you're successful, but everybody around you is failing, that was one of my biggest faults as a leader early on, is that I just wanted to do good. And I was always being, oh, you're not doing as good as I'm doing. And then it has people feel disappointed. It took an entire shift in seeing people as like, you're doing great. Here's what you're doing well. And I think it's easy as a leader to nitpick and say, you're doing this wrong, as opposed to you're doing this right, which makes people want to work harder and helps them move up the ladder too.
Absolutely. I mean, you want to, I'll mention another book. Marcus Buckingham wrote a book called The 9 Lies About Work. And he's written a number of earlier books. He's very much a proponent of strengths-based leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's something I do with my clients all the time. It's like, yeah, we could spend our lives beating ourselves up for our weaknesses, or our people up, or our peers up for their weaknesses. But if you want to become the best version of yourself, it's about understanding what your natural talents are and then leveraging those so they become real strengths. And then surround yourself with people who have natural talents in those things you're horrible at, or you don't like to do. And then everybody's reaching their potential. And it's not as if you can just ignore your weaknesses. If it's core to what you do, you've got to focus on it. But it really is about being the best version of yourself by leveraging your natural talents and strengths.
So let's close out on this idea, Mike, of leveraging natural talents and strengths. How do we even tell what those are when people are working remotely, and how do we support ourselves and others with that?
Yeah, I think, well, there are a couple of ways. And one is, I'd say, as a, if you're a good leader or teammate, if you're a peer, if you know what people's strengths are. If you watch and listen and learn, you know what they are. On top of that, there is how many books? This will be my fourth book or something, but there's a great book and an assessment called Strength Finder 2.0.
Oh, yes.
And there are a number. There's also a website, I think, called the happinessadvantage.com, I think, is another one. But there are strengths assessments that you can do. And you spend 20 minutes, answer a bunch of questions, and it tells you what your top 5 natural talents are. And the reason why that's so important, and it's so important for you to know what they are, so important for you to point them out in other people, is you would think we all know what our strengths are, but we absolutely have no friggin' clue what our strengths are and what our natural talents are, because if we're naturally talented in something, we assume everybody else can do the same thing. I remember I had a staffing, you said, Jennifer, I think you were in staffing. I had a staffing recruiting firm for 3 years, threw a few $100,000 out the window in that firm and then did something else. But I had a woman working for me she was an administrative assistant before she worked for me, no real staffing and recruiting experience. She had this ability to interview someone for 25 minutes, and she knew them. And she knew, just absolutely knew, whether we can trust them to put them out on a job. I would spend 30 seconds getting a first impression, and then the remaining 29 minutes and 30 seconds justifying that impression. I was horrible at it. she had this amazing talent. And when I told her how good she was, she looked at me like I was crazy because she literally thought everybody can do that. And I said, no, Kim, I can't do that. People can't do that. So we need to hold up the mirror to our colleagues and our friends and our direct reports and our teammates. We need to hold up that mirror and say, you know, you have this special talent for doing that. And I promise you, most people look at you and go, really? I didn't even know I did that.
Yeah, there's two sets of questions that I would invite any of our listeners or viewers to use that my mentors have taught me over the years. And one of those is to ask your friends, what's my superpower? What's the thing I'm really great at? Or you can even ask, you know, an old colleague or boss, like, if you were my reference, what would you say about me that you enjoyed the most or that was my greatest strength? However, if anybody really wants to have an opportunity for your growth and development, it takes a lot of courage to ask the next six questions I'm going to give you. The six questions are, what was your first impression of me when we met? Where have I surprised you? Where have I disappointed you? What can you count on me for? What can't you count on me for? And what is your impression of me now? And those six questions were my favorite questions to ask of my own team whenever I would do their reviews. We would go through that because we have filters that we see ourselves in the world through. And to your point, they're often augmented and not accurate at all. One of my, there's another show I host called Conversations at the Intersection of Cutting Edge Science and Spirituality with Deepak Chopra and Don Hoffman. And Don Hoffman wrote a book, one for you to check out, although it takes a lot to kind of get through the book, called The Case Against Reality, Why Evolution Hid the Truth from Our Eyes. And the whole premise of that book, Mike, is that what we're seeing isn't the truth. You know, so we don't even really see things as they are. So it's helpful when people reflect or mirror back to us, like you said, how are we perceived in the world? Who are we in the world?
Love it. And I love those questions. When I listen to this recording back, I'll have a chance to write those questions down and I'll give you credit for it, but I'm going to use them.
Well, give Landmark Education was the one I learned that years ago.
I know Landmark.
Okay. I think I had done it 10 years ago. And those questions, I think I've augmented them over the years, but they've really stuck with me. So, Mike, do you have any closing thoughts or insights for our viewers and listeners today?
I guess my closing thought, and this kind of maybe gets to this book on, you know, what we're looking at is not really reality, is especially in these times where there is a tendency to feel overwhelmed and stressed and worrisome. I promise you, whenever you are feeling any of those disempowering feelings, you are always 100% focused on what you don't want. Mm. Always. The really simple way to turn that around, and all of a sudden you'll sit up straighter, feel a little bit more energetic, a little bit more empowered, is say, all right, I understand what I don't want. What do I want? And when you focus on what you want, now you're empowered. And I promise you, there will be some ideas, good and bad, that will come your way. It's the simplest little exercise. And sometimes we wallow in it. We're like, well, I don't want to focus on what I want. Times are horrible. I'm going to focus on what I don't want. But when you do, when you are able to get a little sanity and say, all right, how do I flip that switch? It literally is a switch you could flip. Focus on what you want. And I promise you, you'll feel a lot more empowered.
Yeah, you're so right. In the midst of COVID, I was quarantined by myself in London for 2 months. And at one point, I was terribly ill. And I would go through these waves of, oh, my gosh, am I going to survive this? And anytime I would catch myself having negative thoughts, I would immediately write down 100 things I was grateful for. And I would shift. And I would not be allowed to get up or do anything else until I finished that list. Because by the time you look at what you do want or what you are grateful for, it's kind of like the 80-20 rule. Years ago, a friend of mine said, Jen, most relationships don't work out because when we first meet somebody, we're focused on the 80% we like and we ignore the 20% we don't like. And then as we progress, we begin to nitpick that 20% we hate and we forget about the 80% we love. And the same is true of everything, you know, friends, our jobs, you know, our team members. And so always going back to the 80% of what's good in any situation is what can really empower ourselves and others, I think.
Love it.
So, Mike, tell people we got to find both your books, two number one best-selling books on Amazon. Give us the names again and where we can find them, please.
So the newest book is Breakthrough Leadership Team. And okay. You can find that on Amazon. You could also go to breakthroughleadershipteam.com to get some more information. There's a Breakthrough Leadership Team assessment on there. The first book is called Performance Breakthrough, The Four Secrets of Passionate Organizations. And if you want to find any more information on me or any of my books or videos, you could go to mike-goldman.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. It's been so much fun having you on the show today, and I'm so happy you joined us. And thank you again to everybody who tuned in now, or if you're tuning in the future. I'm so happy that you chose to spend this time with us, and I hope that you walk away today with something of value, maybe a new little pearl of wisdom that Mike shared that you can bring out to your life and be a leader in your own life. I think it's so important to embrace the strength and the superpowers that we do all have within us. And I'm Jennifer Hill. It's been such a pleasure to have you here today with us on Get Yourself the Job here on LA Talk Radio. If you missed today's episode or any portion of it, you can go to the Facebook page for LA Talk Radio and watch the entire episode on Zoom, or you can go to latalkradio.com to the Get Yourself the Job page, and you'll find the archive of the show within about 5 or 10 minutes once it's done. I also invite you to check it out on iTunes. You can find us on iTunes and many other places where podcasts are found. The show does convert to podcast format afterwards. Just go to iTunes and Get Yourself the Job. Subscribe, leave us any comments, would love any feedback or ratings that you have. That's how we help to improve and give you what you want. Thank you so much for joining us, and wishing everybody a safe, happy, and healthy rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.